When you break an arm, an X-ray gives you this really clean binary answer. Broken or not broken, it's structural, it's highly visible, and frankly, it's comforting.
Yeah, you know exactly what you're dealing with.
Right. But when it comes to chronic pain, that whole standard diagnostic machine is just fundamentally broken.
Oh, absolutely.
We are looking at this highly complex, really murky landscape where standard prescriptions often just fail to provide any lasting relief. And today, we are exploring why over 1.6 million American adults are actively abandoning that standard pharmacy route for therapies we cannot even see, specifically energy healing.
Yeah, and that sheer scale of use, I mean, it moves this entirely out of the fringe wellness category, right? It puts it straight into a critical public health
It's kind of
phenomenon.
keeps the people.
It is. We are looking at a massive demographic of people seeking relief outside conventional boundaries. So anyone wanting to be well informed about the rapidly evolving landscape of pain management, really needs to look closely at what is happening here, especially that intersection between ancient traditions and modern clinical settings.
Spot on. And we have a massive stack of sources to help us do exactly that for you today.
We really do.
We are diving into a really extensive 2025 scoping review by Sprengel and colleagues, plus clinical guidelines from the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Health, the NCCIH insights from the Cleveland Clinic, and a very detailed evidence brief from the Oregon Health and Science University.
That is a lot of heavy reading to get through.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
But our mission is to cut through all the noise, separate the hype from the hope, and find out what the clinical data actually says about biofield therapies like Reiki for chronic pain. Okay, let's unpack this.
Well, to truly grasp why millions are turning to these practices, we really need to trace the lineage. Because biofield therapies, or BTs as they're often called, they are not a modern invention.
Right, they've been around forever.
Exactly. The underlying concept, this idea that a vital life force animates the human body, it's been utilized for millennia across the globe. Depending on the ancient tradition, this energy is categorized differently.
Like, how so?
Well, in traditional Chinese medicine, it flows through meridians and is called qi.
Oh, sure, I've heard of that.
Yeah. And in Ayurvedic traditions of India, it interacts with energy centers, chakras, and is known as prana. Polynesian cultures refer to it as mana. And in Japanese traditions, it's qi.
It's fascinating that practices rooted so deeply in ancient spirituality actually survived into the 21st century. I was reading through the Cleveland Clinic backgrounder, and it noted how a Japanese man named Mikao Usui codified one of the most famous versions of this back in the late 19th century, I think.
Yes, Mikao Usui. He essentially combined rei, meaning universal, and qi, meaning vital life force energy, to create reiki.
Reiki, right. But to globalize it, the modern practice has largely been stripped of its specific religious dogma, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. And that secularization is precisely what allowed it to cross over into Western clinics. But, it creates a massive conceptual clash.
How do you mean?
Well, the dominant biomedical paradigm relies heavily on mechanical chemistry. We treat the human body as this highly complex structural machine. We look at cells, proteins, chemical receptors, and we alter them with targeted chemical compounds, like taking a paracetamol.
Right, very cause and effect.
Exactly. But biofield science, however, views the body through an information-based lens. The foundational theory suggests that an organizing energy field regulates and maintains the biological system.
So it's less about the physical parts and more about the invisible instructions.
Spot on. When a person experiences physical trauma, emotional stress, or chronic pain, practitioners believe this energetic field gets disrupted, creating blockages.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because I kept trying to find an analogy that works for a modern skeptic. We already accept that the human body emits measurable energy fields.
We do, yeah. All the time.
Right, like we rely on electrocardiograms, ECGs, to read the electrical impulses of the heart, and EEGs to monitor the electrical activity in the brain. So is it fair to say biofield therapy is essentially like trying to troubleshoot the body's internal Wi-Fi network, even if our current diagnostic tools lack the sophistication to fully read or decode the signal?
What's fascinating here is that the Wi-Fi analogy aligns incredibly closely with how practitioners themselves describe the mechanism. They aren't claiming to magically cure a disease or physically repair a torn ligament.
Right, they aren't setting broken bones.
No, not at all. They believe they are sending low-level signals to clear those network blockages, restoring balance to the biofield. This restored bandwidth then facilitates the body's innate ability to heal itself.
It makes a lot of sense.
And we can actually see a biological bridge here. When a patient is in a calming environment, receiving focused, empathetic attention, it powerfully triggers the parasympathetic nervous system, you know, the rest and digest state.
Which actively lowers cortisol levels, reduces heart rate, and physically alters how the central nervous system processes pain signals. It's a very tangible, measurable biological response triggered by an interaction with this invisible energy.
Precisely. The field of psychoneuroimmunology studies this extensively. Downregulating the sympathetic nervous system, the fight or flight response, reduces systemic inflammation.
Wow.
So while the practitioner focuses on clearing the biofield, the patient's biology is actually experiencing a measurable cascade of stress reduction hormones.
Knowing that biological bridge, the parasympathetic response, makes the institutional adoption of these therapies make a lot more sense, because you'd naturally assume this Wi-Fi troubleshooting is only happening in expensive, you know, mountain wellness retreats.
Right, the stereotypical crystal healing retreat.
It's exactly. But the reality is incredibly mainstream. In 2012, the International Association of Reiki Professionals reported that 60% of the 25 best hospitals in the U.S. ranked by U.S. News and World Report had formal or informal Reiki programs available to their patients and staff.
60%. That's a huge number.
It really is.
And the integration extends deeply into veteran care as well. The U.S. Veteran Administration allows clinics to offer these therapies primarily because they are deemed exceptionally safe and, crucially, non-pharmacological.
Which is a big deal when you consider the opioid crisis.
Absolutely. Yeah. By 2015, 30% of U.S. VA clinics had integrated these practices. Veterans were specifically seeking them out for complex, layered conditions. Severe anxiety, complex PTSD, chronic back pain from deployments, depression, and just a general enhancement of well-being.
Hospitals are just desperate for low-risk adjunctive therapies.
They are. When dealing with chronic pain populations, you really need options that won't cause further harm.
So if you, the listener, walk into one of these clinics looking for chronic pain relief, the Cleveland Clinic Source and the scoping review outline a few distinct modalities. You're not just getting a generic energy treatment.
Right. There are specific techniques.
Yeah. For instance, pranic healing is a completely non-touch method. The practitioner scans the patient's aura looking for energetic blockages and then uses these sweeping hand motions to sort of scatter fresh energy over the body to recharge it.
Then there is therapeutic touch, or TT, which is ironically named as it is almost entirely hands-off.
Wait, really?
Yeah. Therapeutic touch was actually developed in the 1970s by a nursing professor, Dolores Krieger, which gave it early clinical credibility. In a TT session, the healer first centers themselves into a highly focused state of consciousness. Then they pass their hands a few inches over the patient's body to find imbalances in the energy field and purposefully clear them.
And Reiki itself offers immense flexibility. It can involve light physical touch, hovering the hands just above the body, or remarkably even being performed at a remote distance.
Yes, distance healing is a whole other fascinating element.
But the common thread across all these modalities is the hyper-personalized, time-intensive nature of the experience. The patient receives undivided attention in a quiet, calming environment.
Which is a stark contrast to a standard modern medical encounter. I mean, think about it. A patient with chronic pain might wait 3 months for a specialist, only to receive a 10-minute consultation, a quick physical assessment, and a prescription refill.
It's exhausting just thinking about it.
Right. But in a biofield therapy session, you are receiving an entire ecosystem of care. The lighting, the temperature, the sustained empathetic presence of the practitioner, it is a deeply immersive therapeutic alliance.
Look, I have to play devil's advocate here.
Go for it.
If top-tier hospitals and the VA are integrating this and patients are getting this immersive ecosystem of care, the clinical data should be an absolute slam dunk. But looking at the hard data, it is profoundly muddy.
It is, yeah.
Let's look at the positive findings first. The scoping review highlights a randomized trial published in Frontiers in Psychology, focusing on patients suffering from fibromyalgia.
Great, a notoriously difficult central sensitization syndrome.
Exactly. Chronic fatigue, widespread pain. But after just 4 30-minute Reiki sessions, the patients showed a significant reduction in both state anxiety, so how panic they felt in that immediate moment, and trait anxiety, which effectively lowers their long-term baseline stress levels compared to a control group.
And the 2025 scoping review also points to several smaller studies, noting small to moderate benefits for pain reduction, fatigue management, and improving movement restrictions. I mean, the subjective reporting from patients in these trials is overwhelmingly positive.
They feel better.
They feel better, they sleep better, their self-reported pain scores drop.
But then we hit a massive brick wall with the major health institutions. I mean, the NCCIH has a devastatingly blunt statement. They explicitly say, quote, Reiki hasn't been clearly shown to be effective for any health-related purpose, end quote.
Yeah, that is unequivocal.
And Oregon Health and Science University conducted a massive, rigorous evidence brief on integrating these therapies into clinical services. For pain reduction, they found only low to very low quality evidence.
The Cochrane reviews deliver a similar blow, and Cochrane is widely considered the absolute gold standard for evaluating medical research because they conduct systematic reviews and meta-analyses.
They'll pull everything together.
Exactly. They aggregate data across dozens of independent studies to find the undeniable through line, filtering out bias. When they pooled the results of biofield therapy trials, the aggregate data frequently failed to demonstrate any statistically significant effects beyond what you would expect from a standard placebo.
This is where I have to push back hard. If the NCCIH and the Cochrane reviews, the literal gold standards of medical research, say the evidence is basically non-existent or very low quality, isn't it highly irresponsible for 60% of top hospitals to offer this?
That's the big debate.
Aren't we just institutionalizing an elaborate, deeply relaxing placebo effect and charging patients for it?
This raises an important question about how modern medicine defines effectiveness versus how patients experience relief. The physical and psychological approaches we are discussing, Reiki, therapeutic touch, have immaculate safety records.
Because they aren't physically doing much.
Right. They are non-invasive, and the risk of physical harm is almost non-existent. Proving why they work, or isolating the exact energetic mechanism in a strictly controlled scientific setting, is a massive hurdle. Is it irresponsible to offer a harmless therapy that makes a chronic pain patient feel subjectively better, even if the mechanism is heavily reliant on a placebo response?
That's your point.
Many pain specialists argue that if a patient's suffering is reduced and their quality of life improves, the intervention has immense clinical value, regardless of the biological why.
So what does this all mean for the data itself? Is the therapy failing? Or is the way we measure the therapy feeling?
Oh, that brings us perfectly to the 2025 Sprengel Scoping Review, which honestly acts as a phenomenal autopsy of why the research is so incredibly inconsistent.
I'm keen to hear this.
Well, the Sprengel Review is eye-opening. It diagnoses a fundamental flaw in how we apply traditional Western research methods to holistic medicine. To produce a high-quality randomized controlled trial, an RCT, you need strict standardization. You need to isolate a single variable to prove causality.
Right, like testing a pill.
Exactly. But the review found staggering methodological nightmares in how biofield therapies are studied. First is what we can call the dosage problem.
The dosage problem. Okay, break that down for me.
Almost 10% of the studies reviewed didn't even record how long the healing sessions were or how many sessions the patient actually received.
Wait, really? Imagine conducting a clinical trial for a groundbreaking new pain medication, but the researchers don't bother to write down whether the patient took 5 milligrams or 50 milligrams.
That's wild, I know.
Or if they took it once a week or every day for a month, it completely invalidates the pharmacokinetics. You can't replicate that.
It makes evaluating the true efficacy nearly impossible. Then the review highlights what we can call the healer problem. Studies frequently fail to specify the inclusion criteria for the practitioners.
Meaning they didn't vet the healers.
Right. They omitted the specific training level, the lineage of the practice, or the years of experience of the person performing the therapy.
That's like testing a complex spinal fusion surgery, but not bothering to check if the person holding the scalpel went to medical school. Or if they just watched a YouTube tutorial.
Spot on. You cannot accurately judge a highly manual, practitioner-dependent therapy if you don't aggressively vet the therapist.
It's just bad science.
It is. And perhaps the most insurmountable hurdle in clinical research is the issue of confounding variables. Biofield therapies are inherently multifaceted and tailored to the individual in real time.
They adapt to the patient.
Yes. A practitioner might engage in hands-on touch for a few minutes, intuitively sense a shift in the patient's breathing, move to hands-off sweeping, all while soothing music plays in a low-lit room, perhaps incorporating guided imagery or aromatherapy.
So from a strict scientific perspective, you cannot mathematically isolate the invisible energy variable when the patient is simultaneously benefiting from human touch, a relaxing environment, and deep, focused empathy.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, Western science was built on a reductionist paradigm. It is designed to test single chemical compounds in a vacuum. A paracetamol tablet is a paracetamol tablet, whether you take it in a stressful, brightly lit hospital corridor or in your quiet bedroom.
The chemical does the work.
Right. But holistic therapies are based on complex systems theory. They are synergistic. The strict parameters of a randomized controlled trial actually strip away the very environmental and empathetic context that practitioners argue is absolutely necessary for the healing to occur in the first place.
The research methodology might actually be failing the therapy by demanding it act like a chemical pill when it is fundamentally an immersive experience.
That is a very fair assessment of the current scientific deadlock. The strict parameters of an RCT destroy the ecosystem of care.
Bringing this all together for you, the listener, we've navigated ancient concepts of key and key, modern hospital wards, in a deeply flawed, messy landscape of clinical research. Who is the ideal candidate for this? Who stands to benefit the most?
Based on the clinical guidelines from the Cleveland Clinic and the broader scoping data, the ideal candidate is someone navigating chronic pain, high stress, or severe anxiety who is looking for a safe, non-invasive adjunct to their conventional medical treatment.
An adjunct, so not a replacement.
Crucially, no. It is a profoundly low-risk option to help manage symptom severity. But the critical caveat stressed across all medical literature is that biofield therapy is complementary. It should never be used to postpone a necessary medical diagnosis, and it must never replace conventional medicine.
It's another tool in the toolkit, not the whole toolbox.
Well said. There is a profound quote in the Cleveland Clinic source from Dr. Saper that captures this clinical tightrope perfectly.
What does he say?
He says, there are only so many things you can study in randomized controlled studies in order to understand the totality of what is likely to happen. I think it's critical that we as healthcare professionals listen to our patients and validate their experiences, even if their experiences may run counter to one's own experience and training.
Validate the experience.
Yeah.
I mean, if a patient is in agony and they find a safe, non-invasive practice that helps them sleep through the night, feel less anxious, and manage their pain, that relief is deeply real to them, regardless of what a Cochrane review or a flawed RCT says.
It absolutely is.
And that leaves us with one final provocative thought for you to chew on. We spend billions of dollars in Western science designing massive double-blind trials specifically to rule out the placebo effect. We treat it like this irritating variable that ruins our data.
A nuisance to be eliminated.
Right. But if the placebo effect, which is essentially the sheer, unadulterated power of the human mind, combined with human touch, empathy, and dedicated attention, if that can actually reduce chronic pain and lower severe anxiety, shouldn't we be studying how to actively harness that power rather than just dismissing it as background noise?
It is a compelling shift in perspective. Perhaps the muddy waters of chronic pain aren't a problem to be solved with a sharper, more precise diagnostic tool, but a completely different type of healing waiting to be understood.
So the next time you think about that broken X-ray machine metaphor, maybe the goal isn't to fix the machinery to see the bones. Maybe the goal is to recognize that some of the most powerful types of healing simply don't show up on the film. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep learning, keep questioning, and we will see you next time.